What's up, biohackers? I've got to tell you about this delicious drink that I am sipping on. You know we try to eat clean, prioritize pure ingredients, especially when it comes to our protein powder. If we're not intentional with our sourcing, we could be exposed to so many harmful chemicals and toxins that are hidden in what appear to be healthy and nutrient-rich ingredients. This is why I got to tell you about PW1 whey protein powder from Puri. Puri is third-party tested against more than 200 contaminants. It's also free from hormones, GMOs, and pesticides. Bonus, it is soy-free and gluten-free. It has 21 grams of protein per serving, which makes it a really easy way to increase your daily intake, especially for our ladies out there. And what we all want to know when it comes to our nutrition, is it delicious? Yes, it really, truly is. I am drinking it every single morning these days. I've been pretty much drooling over the bourbon vanilla flavored protein powder in my morning nutrition stack. It's great in my coffee, my home-crafted smoothie, and actually works really well just in my shaker bottle with water. These ingredients are so simple. There's no added artificial sweeteners, so none of the bitter, cringy tastes that come along with a lot of healthy powders. It's just pure and so yummy. Puri is pure origin, potency, and peace of mind. They believe in full transparency with all of their products, including their PW1 whey protein powder. And each batch is certified by the Clean Label Project. Okay, but what does that mean? It is tested for heavy metals, bisphenols, residual solvents, and all of the other yucky stuff we do not want in our bodies. Lastly, every Puri product comes with a QR code with those specific batch test results, so you know exactly what you're getting. Of course, we always want to educate and empower you to be your own best health advocate, so don't just take our word for it. With Puri, you can find the real transparent data behind every single batch, which makes Puri a supplement brand that we can easily trust. All right, so here's the details. Right now, Puri is offering our listeners 20% off their PW1 whey protein and all of their other incredible products. Go now to our exclusive URL, puri.com/biohackerbabes, and use our promo code biohackerbabes. This will even apply to your already discounted subscriptions, and you'll get almost a third off of the price. They are being so, so generous with our audience. Go to puri.com/biohackerbabes. Do not wait. We have our promo code biohackerbabes at puri.com/biohackerbabes. This is nutrition made oh so simple. All right, biohackers, let's get back to the show.
We're digging deep and asking the questions we need to ask.
Years of stress, and not just emotional. I was depleting my body. I was malnourished.
I'm working out like crazy. I'm eating all these healthy foods. How could I not be well?
We have to get back to the basics.
We can change the way our genes are expressed.
Anyone that wants to improve their health or upgrade their health, they should be biohacking. My name is Renee.
And I'm Lauren. We are the Biohacker Babes. We're sisters, and we're joining forces to empower you to become your own biohacker and upgrade your life.
The Biohacker Babes podcast aims to create insight into the body's natural healing abilities, strengthen your intuition, and empower you with techniques and modalities to optimize your health and wellness. Because life is too short to not feel your best every single day.
This podcast offers health, fitness, and nutritional information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitute for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 40 of the Biohacker Babes. We are still stuck at home, hanging out. I am in Maryland. Renee is in Vegas. This feels normal, though. We're still behind our computers chatting, doing our normal podcasting. And we're excited about today's topic because we've been working on it for quite a while. It's like been in the works, but we keep putting it on the back burner because, you know, the sky started falling and we had to push through our other like immune boosting episodes. So we've had this one in the works. We're really excited to talk about it. Interestingly enough, during that time, some other biohackers in the space came out with episodes about the same thing. So I'm sure you saw the title. We are talking about fad diets today. I don't know if it's just like in the air right now because we're all sitting at home thinking about food more.
I certainly am thinking a lot about food.
yeah, so we're going to go through the crazy fad diets that have come up over the years. And we, interestingly enough, I already said that. Funny enough, we found a very wide-reaching history of the fad diets from over time. We should actually send out that timeline because it's really interesting to look at.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I think it was actually kind of funny to see how long it's been around.
Crazy shit on there. Some crazy minds came up with some crazy things, but, and then there's some crazy things that are happening right now. So we just want to break these down, tell you what they all have in common, what works, what doesn't work, what you need to look for, how you can sort of like sort through these fad diets and make them work for you, or just like run for the hills and try something else. So why are fad diets popular? So generally, fad diets are eating a way that is different than you are used to. And it's generally temporary, right? I don't think many people go on a diet with the intention of eating that way for the long term, right? It's temporary. It is a drastic change. And I think we're attracted to them because we haven't found what works. So we then like look to celebrities finding success in the new latest craze. There's all these articles touting their efficacy. New products start popping up the grocery store that are labeled with these diets on them. It's like suddenly everything, all the marketing is in front of us. So we think that they are successful. We are, you know, convinced over time that they must be working because there's products everywhere and everyone is doing it. But that is not the truth. So we need to look a little bit deeper into that. I personally am really fascinated by this whole craze because the word diet really just like makes my mind go nuts. Like I used to hate, how do you feel about the word diet, Renee?
Yeah, I try not to use it.
Yeah, I used to hate it so much because I hear diet and I hear die inside of it.
Oh, yeah, I never really thought of it that way.
The word die is inside because I think it has a negative connotation. Like people are sort of like torturing themselves. Like a piece of you is dying when you're like giving up those chocolate brownies or like stop eating your comfort foods. Yeah, it's generally really restrictive and people are unhappy. And so they don't last for a long term. So I just got curious, like sometimes when my mind gets crazy like that, I'm like, okay, I just need to go back to the dictionary. Like what is the real intention behind this word? Because maybe we're just destroying it. Maybe I'm destroying it. So what I found in the dictionary is that the word diet actually means, or this is what the dictionary says, it's a particular selection of food, especially as designed or prescribed to improve a person's physical condition or to prevent or treat a disease. How wonderful. And nothing in there says that it's temporary, right? Or that you have to be miserable. So yeah, somewhere over time, we like skewed this word. So maybe we can start using it again, but I think we just need to reframe our idea of it and really like weed out the bad diets. So I don't know. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I always tell people, I still use the word diet with my clients, you know, but I really try and re-educate them that it is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It's a lifestyle diet. Is that a thing? Can I make that up?
Yeah, I guess that's the question. If you're going on a diet, are you doing it because you want to be miserable and do something short term? Or is, yeah, are you choosing the lifestyle? I think that's the commonality with all these crazy fad diets is they're not typically designed to be a lifestyle. Some of them are.
Right.
And we'll get into those later. Like the ones that are really founded in science. I do think there's an element of these that are founded in science, but let's run through like this insane list and then we'll go more into the commonalities.
Yeah. So as we were looking up these crazy fad diets last night, a couple that were really funny that stood out to me, I think the tapeworm diet.
No.
I mean, I can kind of understand it. So basically you're swallowing a tapeworm and then that tapeworm is in your digestive system eating up all your food. So I guess you can still enjoy the food, but then there's someone else eating it for you. So you're not getting fat.
That is just so bizarre.
Awful.
This little creature inside of your body just doing all of the eating for you.
Yeah. But it's also eating all your nutrients as well. So you may lose weight, but you'll be extremely nutrient depleted by the end.
Right. Which, not to jump ahead, but that is a commonality with a lot of these diets, right? Nutrient depletion, because we're cutting out major food groups, cutting out major important foods that we need for vitality.
Yeah. So I thought that one was funny. The Sleeping Beauty diet, which actually, when I first heard this, I was like, ooh, I like this. because I love to sleep.
Just keep sleeping, never have to eat.
Yeah. But no alarm, what are they actually using to, they're like slightly sedating you for a day during this diet, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the drug is. I know Ben Greenfield talked about this, and I don't know if they were specific about it, but he mentioned ketamine. Because a lot of like, well, we've talked about psychedelics, but a lot of these drugs that are in that realm really suppress your appetite. So I think that's the idea, is that your appetite is suppressed.
Yeah.
And or you're just so sleepy that you don't eat for days. But what happens when you wake up?
Right. You go back to your normal routine. I mean, hey, if you're using something like ketamine or psychedelics to get through a day of fasting because you're trying to get the benefits of fasting, like, sure, why not? But I wouldn't do it as like a weight loss program.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess if you really want to get that autophagy, but you know, we're not creating positive eating habits by doing that.
No, absolutely not.
Oh gosh, I'm just imagining the Disney character Sleeping Beauty. She goes to sleep and wakes up all skinny and gorgeous. It's kind of messed up. I was asking mom about this last night, about what diet she remembers from being a teenager and like a young adult. She brought up one I hadn't heard of, the hot dog diet.
Oh no, what is that?
Well, I don't know, because I Googled it and I couldn't find anything that officially called itself the hot dog diet, but there's something that was called a military diet that was like the closest thing I could find to this. So basically you eat, there's three foods that you separate. So on day one, you're eating bananas all day long. On day two, you're eating eggs all day long. Day three, you're eating hot dogs all day long. Kill yourself. And on the fourth day, I guess you combine them all together. This sounds like such a joke, but mom remembers going to the grocery store and buying these food items.
Oh, that's hilarious.
She did it. And I was like, so did it work? Like, she didn't even give me a chance, or she didn't even give a chance for a response. She immediately just like rolled her eyes. She was like, of course not.
Oh. But someone that created that probably made some money off of it. So
I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's how you make money, right? Like, you come up with this crazy diet, you write a book and tell everyone that it's the best thing ever. And okay.
Yeah. And then buy stock in bananas, eggs, and hot dogs first.
Yeah.
Gross. Oh, that's a good one.
Some other funny ones, the cabbage soup diet for 1 week. I guess you're supposed to lose like 10 pounds in 1 week. You eat almost nothing but cabbage soup, which I'm like coming to like cabbage soup, but for an entire week, only that.
No.
And then like you go back to your normal ways.
The cabbage soup diet, I still have clients that tell me they have done it or they're thinking about doing it. I don't know if there's like a resurgence.
It's still floating around.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm curious how long it's been around, but.
Anyways, I don't know, but in 1 week to lose 10 pounds, it's probably water weight. So I'm not really sure what the benefit is there. The grapefruit diet, this one is really funny to me because it's a 12-day plan for quick weight loss. Because they found this magical fat-burning ingredient in grapefruit that when eaten with protein triggers intense fat burning. But the diet is actually touted as a high-protein diet, which is interesting because the only guideline is to just like eat as much grapefruit as you can. And again, like, I think it's like a high water content. So are you just losing water weight? And then what?
Are you eating grapefruit on top of your regular diet, or you're only eating grapefruit? Oh.
Unless I'm misinformed, what I could find is that you're just supposed to like add grapefruit, like the fruit or juice, to every meal.
Oh, well, definitely not the juice. Why would you do that?
Yeah. So I'm thinking about like poor food combining. One, because fruit digests so much more quickly than everything else. So if you're eating it with protein, you're probably getting some like putrefied foods in your gut.
Oof,
and two, if you're not cutting anything else out, don't you just have increased calories and more sugar?
Yeah. Which, quick side note, please do not eat fruit with your protein-rich meals, like Lauren said. If you want to eat fruit, well, so there's kind of two tricks, right? You can eat fruit and then wait, you know, 20 minutes before you eat a meal. Because if you think about how quickly fruit is digested, if you were to eat the protein first, I can picture this, right? You like eat the protein, the fruit like sits on top and it just sits and ferments. Yeah. And then people are like, I don't know why I have gas and bloating all the time. And it's that's such a simple fix. So just eat your fruit either separate from your protein or eat it like 20 minutes before. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not a huge follower of like the food combining movement, but I do like that rule. That one really makes sense.
Oh yeah. That's like the one that I do agree with. The rest, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, that's a good one. The grapefruit diet.
What's
another diet?
The vinegar diet. Okay, this is funny. There's a guy, let me see if I can find the date. So on this history, this timeline, it says early 1800s. It's Lord Byron created the vinegar yes. diet. And so I guess he was like the first celebrity diet icon. I don't know how he influenced celebrities, but they all jumped on this. And it's interesting because he was using apple cider vinegar, which is amazing for digestion, right? And it has like some appetite suppressing effects. But he was bulimic and anorexic.
Good. Okay.
Which I think is interesting to note, like the person that created the diet, like what was going on with them? Like what was their like psycho emotional state? Because I think that kind of informs the choices that they make, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't trust someone that had an eating disorder because that's not, again, not creating positive eating habits and is cutting out major, major, major food groups. I'm not sure of the rules on that one, but that's sort of the basic thing. Apple cider vinegar. Things I remember when I was in college, like the macrobiotic diet. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah. That's still kind of floating around.
It's still floating around because it's really based in spirituality and it's Buddhist at nature.
Oh, I mean, okay.
You're just eating like whole foods from nature. It's no animal products, whole grains, vegetables.
So kind of carb heavy.
It's carb heavy. It puts a lot of focus on just real foods. But again, I think you're missing some major food groups and especially animal products, which we know are really useful. Do you remember that book, Skinny Bitch?
Yes. I think you bought that for me in college and I read it in like a day. I was actually really drawn to it, but I can't even remember what her philosophy was.
Vegan diet.
Oh, it was 100% vegan?
I think so.
Oh. Well, I wanted to be a skinny bitch, so I do remember reading that, but I didn't go vegan after.
Oh. I wonder if you adopted any of the principles. Anyways, that was like my journey in college. I like went vegetarian, read Skinny Bitch, did the macrobiotic diet because I was trying to be spiritual and... You know, I got really sick and had no energy for years. So that worked.
Biohack fail, but you tried it.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other ones you came across?
I think we heard about this one from a couple places. Lucky Strike?
Oh, the cigarettes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like when you're hungry, just reach for a cigarette. Good habit forming right there.
I guess it was just funded by the tobacco industry to make money, right?
I'm sure.
They were looking out for anyone's health.
Yeah.
Or waistlines. Just reach for a cigarette.
Just keep smoking and you'll suppress your appetite. You might die, but you'll be skinny.
Well, no, that was really popular back then, especially in the 50s. Women were smoking and trying to stay skinny and using their little vibration belts. You just stand there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We watched the movie Blast from the Past the other night because I know you just watched it too. And she was using that little machine and Ryan was like, what the heck is that? I'm like, you've never seen that?
No. Yeah, that's the image that I always think of. It's like Sissy Spacek drinking a dirty martini with the belt vibrating.
I don't know how she doesn't spill the martini, but hey.
Excellent balance and proprioception.
That's a great movie. Yeah.
Okay, so just to sum up what all of these have in common. Oh, and I just missed like some more recent ones, like Weight Watchers, any of those like points-based systems where you're really restricting and counting calories, which I think there is some value to that, but again, doesn't teach positive eating habits. So what they all have in common, one is that they worked for the one person that created them, right? But unless your genetic material is identical to that, and that's like in the best case scenario, like if there is some real value to it and if it's founded in science, unless your DNA is the same, I don't know, good luck. Like what are the chances that it's going to work just as well for you?
Right.
Two, they're really restrictive and cut out major food groups. So we're finding nutrient depletion, like Renee said, or just missing major vitamins, minerals, nutrients that we get from having a wide spectrum of foods. Just say again, like they don't acknowledge positive eating habits or quality of food.
Yeah, and I think something else they pretty much every diet or program has in common is most of the time they are promoting that you eat whole foods and you cut out junk food, right? Which of course everyone's going to feel better, which is something that really bothers me is like someone's like, oh, I went vegan and now I'm like so healthy and everything's amazing. I'm like, well, what were you eating before? And they're like, oh, you know, I was eating McDonald's and Chick-fil-A and Wendy's or whatever. I'm like, well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course you feel better. And like all those vegan documentaries, right? They're like comparing fast food, you know, horrible, toxic meat, non-organic food to this like organic vegan diet. Well, yes, of course you're going to see a benefit, which I think is where a lot of that misconception around diets happens. It's like, well, what were you eating before? It's probably better.
Great point. Yeah. So do you think that's why they only work temporarily? Like you're obviously making a big change because you're all of a sudden adhering to certain guidelines. Well, and you probably weren't before. You have a greater awareness, which is naturally going to create change. And so how long does that last?
Yeah, I guess it's different for everyone. It depends how close that diet is to what you need, you know, based on your genetics, your gut microbiome, your age, your gender, your physical activity, right? All those markers. So I think it's like the first half is almost just becoming more aware, eating more whole foods, eating less junk food. But then the second half is like that biohacking component where you're really looking at the individuality of what you need. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm kind of picturing your body being like, oh, thank you. You're finally paying attention to me. You're like paying attention yeah. to what you're putting in your mouth and what's being fed. But then like a few weeks in, your body goes, wait, but this isn't specific to me. Wait, this is not what I really want. You know, like it seemed all positive, hunky-dory, but like in reality, this isn't genetically working for me. So how do we find that biochemical individuality? Because right, we are all biochemically individual. We're all different. I mean, different food allergies, sensitivities. We methylate differently. Some of us can absorb nutrients more easily. Some of us can metabolize fats. There's so many factors.
Yeah. Well, that's where the biohacking component comes in. Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit more about like the pros and cons of certain diets and like when that would be appropriate for you or not appropriate.
Yeah. Just one other thought on like why they work temporarily and not long-term. Obviously like cutting calories, I hope most of our audience knows it's not just about calories, it's about quality. But obviously if you're going to reduce calories, right? Like short-term reducing calories in versus calories out is going to produce a change. But over time, if you make a very drastic cut, you can actually do like irreversible damage to your metabolic rate, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of studies about this. And it's like the further you go with that, the more you restrict those calories, the more you damage your metabolism long-term.
Yeah.
And I think there's like a mid-range where if you like just slightly cut back, like you can regain that health of your metabolic system.
Yeah. And I have to say, I definitely see this with clients. The ones that are hardest to support through weight loss are the ones that have dieted their whole life on and off.
Interesting.
I swear those are like, it's like that roller coaster of dieting, right? The restriction and then the binging, those people, like their metabolic dysfunction is just off the charts. Versus someone that comes to me and like, hey, I've never really paid attention to my diet. I've always had a really good weight, but you know, now I've entered menopause and I've gained 10 pounds. You know, like that's almost the easier person.
Well, that's also a sign of metabolic flexibility generally, right? If like their underlying factors are in place and healthy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. There's a lot of mechanisms you can screw up. So yeah, that's interesting. More of a clean slate with someone that hasn't really paid attention.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, if you look at the biochemical side of that, right, we know that it does suppress thyroid function, which is really important for metabolism. It definitely affects your autonomic nervous system when you're doing that restriction, putting your body into fight or flight too often. So definitely some biochemical stuff there.
Well, especially the fight or flight, because you're working so hard, right? You're like, oh, on this diet, like I need change, and you're fighting your system, and then your system goes into stress mode. It's not a way. It's not a way of living.
No.
So we're going to get into some of the diets. I just feel weird saying that word. No, but it's a diet. It's a diet, right? It's like, it's a particular way of eating that has the intention of improving your health.
Yeah. It's a way of eating.
Yeah. We're going to go into some of the ones that are really founded in science and can have some amazing benefits, like if they are right for you. And that's the key here, finding out if they're right for you. And we're living in an amazing time where we have so many DNA tests. There's a lab testing you can do at home at your own convenience to find out these genetic markers that predispose you to one diet or the other, finding out food allergies, and that's with a test or without, just something simple as an elimination diet, food journaling. Like there's so many ways to gather this information to find out what works for you. Instead of, I don't know, I didn't go through the worst journey, but going through college, like being afraid of killing animals, like going through the whole vegan vegetarian diet and crash course, trying all these things that made me feel like shit. So hopefully if you haven't already done that, you can start clean with all these tests and do the biohacker way.
Yeah. Okay. So I feel like we should start with the ketogenic diet just because that's like the latest in popular diets.
Very right? popular.
Everyone's like keto this, keto that. I think we're actually like seeing the end of that. I'm seeing like a lot of people are like, oh, I did keto. It didn't work. Oh, I already tried keto, or I did it and it worked. I'm done. You know? So I think we're seeing the end of that, but people get really mad when a diet doesn't work for them and it worked for their friend. So I'm hoping that this will give you a little bit more perspective on why that is.
Yeah.
So ketogenic diet, I want to start with the pros. I think it can be an amazing diet. It's high fat, low carb. We know it helps with a lot of neurological conditions. So things like epilepsy, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, also metabolic dysfunction, type 2 diabetes, obesity. So there's some really good clinical evidence that this can be good in those cases. So the cons, I would say, well, number one, I think just everyone was jumping on board whether they needed a therapeutic version of that or not. But genetically, a lot of us cannot do keto. And that's where the genetic testing comes in, like Lauren said. But there are some things, you know, where your cholesterol would go up. You would actually gain weight. You would have an increase in inflammation. So a lot of markers you can see on lab tests where keto would make you worse off. Mm-hmm. So genetically, you definitely want to be careful with that. And then something called dirty keto. And I think you could probably call every diet like with a dirty version. You know, I've seen
like Atkins diet, which was also like high protein, high fat, but didn't talk about quality at all. And people were like eating meat for McDonald's, but cutting out the carbs.
Right, right. I don't think that was Dr. Atkins' original plan. I think probably it kind of got bastardized, and now there's Atkins protein bars and protein smoothies. Like, so people like jump on this diet bandwagon and create all these products, right? Now vegans can have vegan ice cream and vegan cookies. Okay. It's still sugar, right? So anyway, so dirty keto, right? People started making all these keto products, and I think people started eating those, and one, if they were toxic oils, they were actually increasing inflammation in the body. And two, they were making these little treats so yummy and delicious that people were eating way too many calories.
And just popping them because it's keto or it says keto and like, I can have that. Yeah. Way too many calories. And just like flooding your system with fats like all too quickly.
Right. I think any diet, you can always overdo like the negative side of it like that. What else? Keto flu. That's a huge turnoff for a lot of people. They don't want to get through that, but there are hacks to get through that if you do decide to do ketogenic. So, you know, adding more MCT oil, which is a really quick source of energy for the body. Also adding electrolytes, because typically the keto flu actually comes from an electrolyte imbalance. So adding in electrolytes is a good hack. But also just know it takes time to become fat adapted, right? Which is part of the keto flu thing.
Which I find most people don't even understand what that is. They're like, what do you mean fat adapted? I've talked to so many friends about this that tried keto. They just went 0 to 100 and didn't understand the mechanism behind it. Like you're switching your energy source. Like your body generally wants to run off of carbs and glucose and you're shifting that to be able to run off of fat. They don't understand that. They just like one day are eating this way, next day the other. And it's they're like coming up against a wall.
Yeah, that doesn't happen overnight. I mean, most of us grew up running on carbs and sugar, right? All our fruit by the foots and whatever else crap we're eating.
Those were good.
But yeah, your body isn't going to just switch to burning fat overnight. I think a lot of people say about 4 weeks on average is what it takes to really switch over. But once you switch over into that, you should be able to have that metabolic flexibility where you can burn carbs or fat for fuel.
That's where like the carb cycling or cyclical keto is useful, right?
Right, right.
Cycling through that so you can still get the benefits.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of everyone trying that. Just teaching your body how to burn fat is a great thing for everyone to do because if you think about it, carbs are such a short-term source of energy, right? So you're always needing to resupply the body with that. And if there is always a supply of that, why would your body ever go to your fat storage to burn that fat for fuel? It doesn't need to. So if you can restrict the carbs for a little bit, teach your body how to tap into that fat for fuel, then go back into that cyclical keto, you should be able to tolerate carbs a lot better.
So what would you say is the best way to test your own body to see if this is a useful diet for you? And if you should even entertain the idea?
I would say number one, to do the genetic testing. I wish I had done that before I tried keto. I kind of fell into that trap. I didn't know why keto wasn't working for me. I have like three out of four of the genes that would not be good for keto.
And can you just like run through those really quick so we know what to look for?
Yeah. Well, one FTO, which we all think of like the fat gene. So that's where you would actually gain weight from eating saturated fat. So here I was like loading up on coconut oil and butter and bacon, not realizing I was doing more harm. PPAR is another gene also associated with increase in weight gain from saturated fat. I mean, you technically could do keto with more like monounsaturated, right? Where you're incorporating more olives and olive oil and avocado, things like that, less saturated fat, but you have to be really careful with that. Also, so FADS, the FADS gene, that's where high fat can actually increase inflammation in the body. And that's even with the good fats, we could see an increase in inflammation, which obviously we don't want to happen.
Right. And some people are just susceptible to that.
Yeah. And then the other thing is the familial hypercholesterolemia. Say that 10 times
fast. Long one. Good job.
So that basically just means you're going to be more sensitive to high cholesterol levels when you do keto. It's interesting because keto, we really see both sides. We see people where their cholesterol spikes and then other people where their cholesterol drops and becomes more balanced. So I think that's really that genetic factor. So that's good to know too.
So personal. So just easy tests you can do to find this out, DNA Fit, 23andMe, and then to go a little further, like plugging into Found My Fitness, you can find this out. Like Renee and I both found, like she found out that she doesn't do as well with saturated fat. I actually am pretty good with saturated fat, and they make like, they give you this really clear diagram that just shows you like what the balance should be for you.
Yeah, such a great test for everyone to do. And then even if you are going to do keto, please test your ketones. Right, Lauren, we see that a lot. People are like, oh, I'm just eating high fat. But like, are you actually in ketosis? Because if you're not, that's when you're going to see a lot of issues in the body.
Yeah, you have to quantify this stuff. There's no way that you can know what your ketone status is. And there's a lot of different ways to do that, right? The urine strips, which I think are probably not as useful because that's just like the leftover ketones.
Yeah, which I mean, test. I think urine can be good for the first 4 weeks, right? Because it's just, it's the ketones you're spilling over into your urine. But after about 4 weeks, your body adapts to that. It's not going to continue with that. So after 4 weeks, you got to cut that off. Yeah, and you were saying breath test.
You do a breath test, but I think the easiest way is just to do the blood test, the finger prick at home, which I know some people still aren't into, but I find that have found that that's really accurate and easy to do once you get the hang of it.
Yeah. The Keto Mojo is awesome. The breath test I think is still debatable. Blood's the way to go. Cool. So that's keto. I don't know. Anything else, Lar?
No, that's really helpful. I mean, I've never fully jumped on the keto bandwagon, but I really like aspects of it. I like trying to achieve that metabolic flexibility and being fat adapted, but I really fall into more of like the cyclical keto group that really works for me. Yeah. Again, this is just finding out what works for you. So there are aspects of it that are really helpful for sure. What is next on our list? Paleo diet.
Paleo diet, which I still love. It has
its place. I love the paleo diet. Yeah.
I think, again, paleo focuses on whole foods, which is great. But so for anyone that's not familiar with paleo, let's take a step back. So you're basically eating animal protein, some fruit, vegetables, nuts, seeds, healthy oils. Pretty basic. You're cutting out all the grains, the dairy. But again, you're getting back to eating whole foods. So most people do see a benefit from this. And I see, especially for people that are dealing with inflammation, especially skin issues, digestive issues, some metabolic dysfunction, right? Because we're cutting out a good amount of carbs. So I do see some benefits there.
Though I think there are some people that start to experience digestive issues on this, especially if they went from the opposite extreme, like if they weren't eating any animal proteins and then suddenly started eating a lot of animal proteins, that could create, I mean, if you have like a reduction in stomach acid and you don't have it and then you start eating all this protein and then you will develop, you know, those imbalances and that creates a lot of digestive upset. So kind of, again, depends on what you were doing before.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad you pointed that out. That's a really good point. In a hack for that, for someone that is dealing with that, because it's so sad when you see someone that's like, oh, I'm trying to eat meat again, but I just get like a rock solid like feeling in my stomach. I feel awful. So your body's really smart. It's going to adjust the acidity in your stomach to what you're eating. Obviously, animal protein being the hardest to digest. If you're not eating that, your body's going to lower its stomach acid. Because if it didn't, you would end up with a stomach ulcer. That's not good. So years of that, right? Your stomach acid drops. But then if you want to add animal protein in, I say start with like 2 to 3 ounces of animal protein, very small amount, and supplement with something like, you know, apple cider vinegar or HCL, you know, betaine HCL capsules, something like that, just to help boost that stomach acid temporarily. And you can overcome that.
You were going to get the ACV in there somewhere.
I actually created the apple cider vinegar diet. It was me.
Lord Byron Renee. But yeah, just, I mean, more motivation to just ease into things and really understand the mechanism behind this.
Yeah.
All right, cons of the paleo.
Yeah, and I think, Lauren, you mentioned this before. I think it's a con to a lot of these diets when you start cutting out major food groups. So paleo, you're cutting out all the grains, which, I mean, yes, there's an argument there because of the gluten, the glyphosate, which is the pesticide sprayed on all these grains. Some benefit there. But when you start cutting these groups out, you start to kill off the bacteria in your gut that digest those foods. So, right, we have specific probiotics that digest the gluten and the wheat and the dairy, whatever. If you stop feeding the bugs those foods, they're going to die off. So,
and it's really hard to go back to that.
Yeah.
You screw yourself.
Yeah.
That's so, like if you go completely gluten-free, I mean, which some people really seriously medically need to do, but if you're just cutting out gluten, if you don't have high sensitivity to it, you're just cutting it out because you want to be cleaner, you kind of can't ever go back to gluten because you're going to have this flare up, right? Like it's going to be really inflammatory and stressful. Your gut really likes variety.
Right. Variety is key. And you know, I feel like some people judge me when I say I'm not gluten-free. I don't know. I'm like 99%, but I know that's not technically gluten-free. When I'm home, I don't eat gluten. But if I go out to a restaurant and there's like this amazing burger with a bun, like I'm going to eat it. I'm going to feed those bacteria in my gut to say, please stay around because I want to enjoy this every once in a while.
Yeah. I don't want it to be a traumatic event in the case that I eat something by accident or do want to indulge in something that has some gluten.
Right. Yeah. Good luck with a long life of never eating gluten again. Oof.
Yeah. Though, I mean, again, we're very grateful that we don't have celiac or we don't have a high sensitivity to gluten. Cause if you do, you have to stay off of it. But if you are in our camp in that sense, I think it does. Yeah. I'm 99% too. I like hanging in there,
but yeah, good point. Yeah. If you're celiac and sensitive, don't mess with it.
I would say some other cons with paleo. Well, I mean, you said removing certain food groups, but like if you don't have a sensitivity to dairy, like you could be missing out on some really potent nutrients from dairy products, especially like from grass-fed animals that are fermented. Like I do pretty well with dairy and I would miss that food group if I was strict paleo. I like more like the paleo template. That's what Chris Kresser talks about, the paleo template, like following these guidelines, but then personalizing it for you. Because the emphasis is on eating whole foods and getting back to our roots and nature. You have to make those slight adjustments that work for you so you're getting the right nutrients depending on your food allergies or lack of food allergies.
Yeah, good point. And that's also something you can see on DNA Fit really easily, how you tolerate dairy. Cool. And then to branch off of paleo really quick, so there is the autoimmune protocol or autoimmune paleo, which is just paleo even stricter. So you're cutting out like nuts and seeds. That is definitely a therapeutic diet for short term, but it can be helpful for people dealing with autoimmune conditions.
Next up, the carnivore diet.
Ooh.
Probably have been hearing more and more about this. This is like the anti-vegan diet camp right now. There's like two types of people in the world right now that are like beating heads, the carnivore people and the vegan people. It's quite a fight.
Yeah. It's the 2020 fight.
Yeah. So some of the pros of the carnivore diet. So, well, carnivore diet really sort of encourages people to eat like nose to tail. You're eating all animal products because they believe that you can get all of the nutrients that are necessary from eating every bit of the animal. So the organ meats, that's sort of like the big change that people aren't used to, eating the organ meats in addition to the meats. So the pros for this are people are getting a lot of relief from stubborn digestive issues like IBS and IBD, because when you eat carbs, there's a lot of fermentable carbohydrates and starches in there that if you have a sensitivity to, or you have some underlying bacterial, fungal, parasitic yeast thing happening, you're going to react to those carbs. And then you get things like IBS, IBD, like crazy gut problems. So people are seeing a lot of benefit by just completely cutting out those starches and vegetables. So it's the similar benefits to people to following like a low carb diet.
Yeah. And I would add, if you're going for the digestive aspect, like maybe try a low FODMAP diet first, which is where you are cutting out all those, like you said, all those fibers that tend to cause gut issues. It's a little less strict than carnivore.
Yeah. Cons, I would say we don't know the research on the long-term results. I'm really hesitant to try this or really get into that because it just feels so new to me. And also I just love salad way too much. So
yeah, I love again, my veggies. I'm
grateful that I don't have those gut issues. If I did, I would definitely try it, look into it. I think there is some benefit. I personally know a lot of people that actually have done it and are seeing amazing results. Is it long-term? I am not sure. I think the goal would always be to get back to a wide variety of foods. We're not restricting food groups. Also, it lacks a lot of fiber because you're cutting out all the vegetables. And we know that fiber is really, really useful for a lot of things that are health related. So I don't know. What are people on the carnivore diet doing to supplement fiber? Do you know, Renee?
I haven't heard of them supplementing with anything, but that would be a good question. And if you, like, could you add a resistant starch powder, fiber powder to offset that? Maybe, but I think there's just too much research showing the benefits of eating vegetables. I just can't comprehend like how that's okay to do long term.
Yeah. I would put carnivore diet more in the camp of like the AIP or a specific therapeutic medical approach to heal a certain aspect of your health short term.
Yeah. And I think we're going to get off of it. Right. I think hopefully soon we'll start to see maybe the genetic tests that would determine if this would be helpful too. Yeah. Because again, if you look at the ancestral piece of it, you know, there were cultures where they couldn't grow vegetables or fruit, right? It was too cold and they did get all their nutrients from the animals, really the nose to tail, right? They're eating not just the muscle and the meat, but the organs where you're getting your fat soluble vitamins, the blubber and everything that's included, right?
The blubber.
Versus you look at maybe like a tropical area where they were probably eating a lot of fruit and fresh produce. So I think genetically we're going to see that there's something going on there.
Yeah.
Right. Depending on where your family's from.
So the nutritional piece of the organ meats is really important, especially if you're on a vegan or vegetarian diet. I don't know, you're probably against eating anything from animal meats, but that's a great way to supplement the nutrients that you're missing from not eating, like directly eating animal meats, because you can get it in supplement form. It's a great source of B12, copper, vitamin A is a big one. What else is in there?
Carnitine.
Folic acid, iron.
Iron. Oh yeah. Iron's a big one.
So those are all the big ones that you miss out if you're eating a non-animal protein diet. So some benefits there, but again, like just stay aware. And I think this is probably not long-term, but useful in some cases.
Okay. My diet next, kind of, sort of Mediterranean.
Is that your diet?
So
you're on a diet?
I'm on a diet. I'm on, no. So a lot of my genetic markers point me to Mediterranean. Like it keeps coming back, which makes sense.
I remember that.
I mean, San Patero, right? Italian, Mediterranean, that makes sense. So some pros of Mediterranean, again, it's focusing on whole foods. You're doing quality protein, lots of healthy fats, you know, think olives, olive oils, avocado, a lot of those good monounsaturated fats. You also do some grains, even grains that have gluten are allowed on Mediterranean. But I think if you go back to like the original Mediterranean diet, they weren't dealing with the glyphosate issue. So I think that's why grains typically weren't an issue. And that's why also people can go to Italy now and eat grains and not have any issues, where when they eat it in the US, they have digestive issues.
Right.
There's really good long-term research. Mediterranean diet, this has been around a really long time. And even if we look at Sardinia, Italy, where it's one of the blue zones, so a lot of the population live to over 100, they're following the Mediterranean diet. So there's definitely some good long-term research there, which I really like. A lot of brain boosting support. I think that is really from the healthy fats. We know that the avocado and the olives, olive oil, that's very good for the brain. Also tends to be a lot of seafood. So you're getting some DHA and EPA. So the good omega-3s from the fish. Any other pros of Mediterranean?
I mean, I think, again, it just really focuses on eating real foods, which if you're not eating real foods and then you switch to eating real foods, that's going to produce a huge benefit.
Yeah. I would say the only con really to Mediterranean is if you can't tolerate grains right now, depending on like if you have a health issue. I don't know. Yeah. That's really like my only con. And I mean, I guess if genetically it's not for you, but again, depending on where your family's from, something to think about.
Well, I don't know. I'm a San Patero too, but my genetic tests do not point me in this direction. I must have more German, Irish, maybe more Irish, because I just picture myself like in a field of really green grass with the cows. Like I could survive off of just like grass, cows, dairy.
Not potatoes.
Oh no, potatoes? I wasn't even picturing the potatoes. I'm just like picturing myself in a wide open field of sunshine, grass, and cows. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I can tolerate more saturated fat. So that's interesting though, because we're very related. We're sisters, but there's still some genetic variance there.
Interesting.
Last one. Let's try to blow through this because we are running out of time. Plant-based diet. So this is the opposite of the carnivore diet. And if you saw Game Changers, that documentary that came out last year that is enraging a lot of people, I am one included. Let's just get into the pros. I'll leave my comments for later. So some research shows that it minimizes the health risks from eating meat, potentially cardiovascular disease, premature aging, and cancer. I think this already speaks to like the quality of the food. They don't really go into this in that documentary. Like quality is everything. And so if you're hearing about the health risks from eating meat, it's probably because the studies are all done on shitty meat. So pay attention.
And too much meat.
And too much meat. Yeah, absolutely.
We don't need that much.
Yeah. Another pro, most people don't eat enough vegetables. So sometimes just shifting your focus to a more plant-based diet forces people to incorporate more veggies and more plants into their diet. I love meat and I am a carnivore, but I would probably call myself plant-based because I love vegetables and I try to incorporate them into every meal. I'm not anti-carnivore. I'm still plant-based.
I kind of hate the term plant-based. Like no one really knows what that means. To me, I think plant-based just means that more than 50% of your diet comes from plants. That's my definition. Yeah. So in that case, I am plant-based. But then the other percentage is coming from animals.
Right. I just think anything that's anti-anything is going to harm you. Yeah. Run away from anything that is anti. You should never do this because one, figure it out for yourself. Because even sisters can be genetically different. And if you're cutting out a major food group, you're probably missing out on some nutrients. So it's great to shift your focus to plant-based, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't be eating other things. So some cons we see on this diet, nutrient deficiencies are very common, like vitamin B12, DHA, carnitine, CoQ10, creatine, vitamins A, D, and K. I'm like feeling weak just thinking about being deficient in these things. You need those and you get them from meat. So here's another reason why you could supplement with organ meat supplements if you don't eat meat, but hopefully you're eating some. Another thing is it's very easy to do it wrong. There are many plant-based processed foods like pasta, ice cream, bread. I'm just thinking I just flash back to like my college roommate that was vegetarian before I did. And she lived off of, you're going to die. She lived off of ramen noodles and gummy bears.
Sounds like all the food groups.
All, I mean, there were a lot of colors there in those gummy bears, but.
Oh my gosh, eat the rainbow.
Yeah. Major nutrient deficiencies. And I'm not saying that our audience says that because that's pretty stupid. But
yeah, but still there are like other plant-based processed foods that maybe look healthy, but then you turn it over and it has like corn, maybe cornstarch, canola oil, like a lot of inflammatory ingredients in what you would think is a healthy vegan food.
Yeah. So I think the guideline is just careful. If you're trying to stick to a particular diet, meal plan, don't just run out there and like our marketing is so powerful right now and people are really trying to profit from this. So don't just turn to a box that has the label of your diet on it. If it's in a box, it's not real food.
Yeah. And I have to share this with everyone back to what you said about the fat soluble vitamins, how you don't get those in plant-based diets. So when I was working with Dad, the original biohacker, biological dentist, I was helping a lot of his patients with nutrition. And over again, the patients that were on a vegan or vegetarian diet, their teeth were rotting away. They're like falling out.
Oh, that's the Weston A. Price diet, right?
Well, I mean, that's where all the Weston Price research came from, right? Showing that, so for anyone that doesn't know Dr. Weston Price, he was a dentist that actually traveled the world. He looked at different cultures and looked at their dental health and what they were eating. And he found very clearly that the ones that were eating from their land, full fat, animal protein, amazing smiles, like straight teeth, white teeth, clean, no cavities, no gum disease.
Great jaw structure.
Yeah. I mean, all 32 teeth fit perfectly because their jaws were just big and strong. Amazing. And then you go to the next town over where they had incorporated white sugar, white flour, all that kind of junk. Within one generation, tooth decay, crooked teeth, gum disease, all that came in. So Weston Price, amazing stuff. You got to look into that. But I saw it firsthand, and even Dad would say, you have to help this patient. I'm literally scooping out decay from their teeth. Scooping. That's not good. And so I tried to help people. Some people would jump on board to eating animal protein. Some people would supplement. But that's, if your teeth are rotting and you're getting a lot of cavities, you have to look at what's going on. There's some nutrient deficiency. And if your teeth are decaying, guess what your bones are probably doing?
And the rest of your body.
Yeah. We can't really see our bones unless you're doing, you know, a DEXA scan every 3 months. But your teeth, you can see that every day. So it's a really good indicator of what's going on deeper within.
Yeah.
There's my rant.
One more side rant. A lot of friends that are jumping on this plant-based diet and that are now vegan, that are just like adding in, you mentioned this earlier, like people are starting to eat like more cookies or muffins or whatever because they're like labeled vegan, right? So like I can have that because it says vegan. So then you're adding in processed food, processed sugar, all the things that are anti what this diet was about, right? Eating more real foods.
Right.
So just be wary of that motivation to go out and buy something that has been marketed to you because someone else is profiting off of that and your body is not profiting.
Ooh, that's a good quote right there.
Oh, thanks. So just to wrap this up, like again, things to consider when going on a diet, which hopefully we have reframed the word diet. I'm maybe finally getting on board with the word diet. So we're all biochemically individual here. We are all unique, and that considers genetics, age, gender, physical activity, gut microbiome, your own personal health goals, right? These are all going to inform what you should be putting in your mouth. And that is not going to be the same as your sister, your mom, your best friend, anyone else you come in contact with. Yeah, this is highly, highly individual. Number two, make sure you do your research and you understand the mechanism in action here. So just as an example, going back to like the keto stuff, make sure you understand what it means to be fat adapted. Understand how you get to that place. Understand how to test your ketones. That's really important. You can't just like Google this shit and then expect in a week that your body's going to be benefiting from all the purported benefits, right? And then last thing, I think this is the most important thing. Ask yourself, is this a lifestyle for you or is this a crash short-term diet way of life? Is this short-term to like achieve something next week, right? The Sleeping Beauty diet. Are you trying to just like not eat for 4 days because you want to look good for a photo shoot? Which, okay, if you do once or twice in your life, not going to kill you. But in general, we hope that this diet is going to be a lifestyle for you. Otherwise, it's probably not going to work out.
Yeah, the lifestyle piece is so important just because it's going to be easier in the long term. If you can figure out what works for you long term, that is the key. Can't emphasize
that. It's hard to think long term, though. This is kind of completely unrelated, but Mom was having me listen to Peter Attia's most recent podcast that he did with his daughter. He was like answering questions for like the kids that are trying to understand what's happening with the coronavirus. And he sort of likened it to like, sometimes we make choices that are good for us in the long term. Like, yes, we want to eat the ice cream because it'll make us feel good now. So even though we maybe don't understand the mechanism behind like flattening the curve and how we can each do our part, but we see the long-term goal of like having better health and affecting the planet and making it better for everyone, right?
That's good. I need to listen to that one.
Yeah, it's really awesome. His daughter is so cute.
Oh, one more thing to add in. I think everyone should check this out. The Institute for the Psychology of Eating kind of goes on to what you said, like, okay, the ice cream makes us feel good now, but not long-term. So really looking at the mental, emotional, psychological piece of eating. His book is awesome. Have you read his book?
No, I haven't.
It's super easy. You would read, I always recommend everyone reads one chapter every Sunday. It's like 10 chapters.
I've watched some YouTube videos. I do need to read it.
Yeah. Cool. But if you want to do a diet, do his diet. Because like I said, you just read one chapter a week and it gives you something to focus on for that whole week. Has nothing to do with the food you're putting in your mouth. It's everything else around it. I think it's so, so helpful for people. If you can get through that program, I think you'll be much better off long-term.
Awesome. So I was going to go into our own personal diets, but I think we kind of already covered that. Also, I don't want to harp too much on what we're doing because we want you to go home and figure out what you are doing. So hopefully we covered that. Anything, Renee, on that?
Yeah, I think we covered all that. And hopefully this was really educational for people. And again, go be a biohacker. And if you need extra help, Lauren and I are here for you. We can dive a little bit deeper if you need.
Awesome. That is all we have for you. We hope that you are staying safe and healthy and making really awesome food choices while you're stuck at home. Stay tuned. We will see you guys next week.
See you next time.
Love this episode of the Biohacker Babes podcast? Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. We truly appreciate your support.
Until then, happy biohacking.